30.
All right, everybody, good morning. Well, good afternoon, or good evening, good night. Whenever you're listening to this, you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and you're listening to The Stroll Show with the C and the Flow. Unfortunately, it's only C today. The Flow is out scuba diving. He's getting his scuba license. Yeah, the most interesting man in the world, Stephen the Flow Gergenti. May he be ever buoyant on his travels. But today, we have a special guest. My friends, Silver Teeth, are here from all the way from Rhode Island, originally from Brooklyn. It's where I met them originally. And I'm excited to have them in the studio today. We got Bill and Gabby. How you guys doing? How's it going?
Doing great. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. So what's going on with you guys right now? Where are you at? Currently, you're on a tour, but you're kind of going back and forth a little bit. Tell me a little bit about what's going on right now.
Right now, we're kind of hitting a bunch of different places in the Northeast, and I think it's a tour. Some people wouldn't say it's a tour because all the dates aren't in a row. We're not playing Tuesday night in East Jabumfuck Mass or whatever. But you know, for the most part, yeah, we're doing now is we're kind of Wednesday through Sunday, we're heading out and performing a couple of shows or even just one show in towns like Boston, coming back down to Brooklyn, and then we go back up to Newport and go back out again.
And
Northampton.
Northampton, of course. New Haven.
Yeah, like a lot of the East Coast kind of stuff, but like you originally started in Brooklyn, right? We were talking about this before we went live on air, and I think everybody should hear a little bit of this conversation because we are in Bushwick on Radio Free Brooklyn. We should talk a little bit about Brooklyn, like a little history of Brooklyn. Me and Bill, we go way back to the days when he was in a band called Governors, and they were a great band, and we used to play a lot of the pickle factories or whatever that used to be around.
Absolutely.
In Bushwick or whatever. So, I mean, in your guys' experience, like, what from there to now, like, what do you think is the biggest change, even in that short amount of time, of where Brooklyn was at and where it currently stands today?
The nature of the real estate industry's kind of reach and how it's kind of usurped what we had going there.
Right. You
know, they sort of took the brand and made that into something a little bit polished and implemented it for basically corporate housing in the same regions that we were doing the activities that you described.
Right.
Also just lack of compromise in general from whatever. I mean, people still call this a scene. I don't see it anymore as a scene.
Right.
I just think that once things get a bit too comfortable, it's not a scene anymore.
Right.
So, and the venues are just too polished, as you know.
What do you think that is, though? What do you think attributed to that comfortability that these people have started to feel? Like, where did the danger go? Is it because Brooklyn is kind of being, you know, like you said, usurped by all these big companies? So, like, when these big companies come in, right, and the corporations and all that, like, they kind of lull you into this false sense of security, right? Like, it's like, oh, there's a McDonald's over there. This is a good place. You know, like, oh, there's a Five Guys or something or whatever. You know, you see that stuff and you think, okay, this is safe here now. Like, but back even 10 years ago, not even, like, there wasn't really much of that going on. So I think that, yes, the comfortability, that is a thing for sure. And the danger is gone. And what is it about, like, comfortability that you think kind of neuters, you know, the punk rock spirit, like, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I moved down here in 2006, and I remember there at least in my first month in town, you know, in town as in Bushwick,
yeah.
There were at least two or three cars set ablaze in front of my building. You know, there are always all kinds of kind of weird, mischievous characters,
right.
You know, maybe self-included, I guess, just sort of being around. And I felt like I never felt unsafe. I never felt like I was going to get mugged or somebody's going to blow me up or anything like
right.
that, or take my guitar from me or something like that. But I feel like there was just something in the air that, you know, it was a little bit more hands off. And I think that in all senses, and I think that contributed to the idea that it was a little bit more dangerous to be out there, because, you know, you're building out loft spaces that are not to code, electric code, all of the sort of typical housing standards.
Right, right.
Were kind of not really enforced.
Uh-huh.
All the sort of normal policing standards that you'd find in Williamsburg, or certainly in Manhattan, or
yeah.
anywhere down Park Slope, wasn't really enforced either.
Right.
So
it's like the wild, wild east back then. Like, it was a little more so than it is today. You know, like, it was this, like, anything was possible, and anything, almost anything, kind of goes at back then a little bit. Now it's really not like that.
Yeah, and I think that one more note on that too is that we sort of ushered in cooperation with the NYPD and in cooperation with residents and businesses, we kind of all of us being the musicians, like Cinema and Governors, all these bands.
All these bands, yeah.
And the venue, DIY venue owners, and all the people that would come out and support these shows, we all kind of collectively took the place of what would otherwise have been much more annoying or dangerous, realistically dangerous stuff that would probably happen there. You know, certainly a lot of heroin activities and so forth, things like that. You know, not
yeah.
that totally disappeared, but,
no.
You know, if you look at the layout of that area, the East Williamsburg Industrial Park, it
yeah.
has the potential to go kind of any direction.
yeah.
So what we were doing there, I think, ultimately made it safer, because more and more quote-unquote mainstream people
yeah.
started to find themselves out there, and people started to invest.
Yeah, that's a real interesting.
Yep. Yeah, I personally, when I moved here, I moved from living in Pittsburgh for a year, went back to Brazil and moved to New York, having no clue of where I would really find a home, or didn't know anybody but a friend from my hometown, which, yeah. you know, was completely also removed from where I ended up being. I actually came to New York with this image in my head. I was like, oh, I'm going to see punk, and I'm going to go to punk shows, and I'm going to see that kind of music. And I was totally disappointed.
oh, sorry.
yeah, in the beginning, because that was just not what was really going on, like, as far as, like, at most places.
Right, totally, yeah.
And, but I ended up moving to, and I remember my friend helping me carry my stuff, and she was like, you're crazy that you're moving here. This is dangerous. This is dirty. This is weird. And to me, it was just, like, the lack of comfort. It was, like, it was so unimportant. It was just like almost like mandatory. It was like we're letting go of just so much stuff that we didn't need.
Mm-hmm.
And comfort was that. It was just like we don't need that.
Right.
We need something else, and we're all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like going to where we really needed to go. You know, when mm-hmm. I moved to McKibben Street to Bill's apartment. And then people just started needing more and more comfort as years went by.
Right.
Where before it was like, you know, people were making holes on the walls to make a bedroom out of it. And floors were always dirty. And everything was always dirty. And everybody's nails were always dirty. You know? Right.
People were doing real art and real work that, you know, like. Go ahead.
I was gonna say it was blue collar. It was like lunch pail art. It was like real deal. You know, not really about the creative services industry as much. Although there were people who were making money off of that as well. It was more like, all right, we need to find a way to get through each day
mm-hmm.
and make art. And it was that simple. And I think that the facilities allowed for us to kind of go in there and say, all right, if there's people in the desert right now fighting in these wars and they're sleeping in tents and whatever risks they have, and they're my age, we're fighting the same battle at the end of the day with different tools.
So
at least I'm not in a tent. You know what I mean? At least we've got, so you can kind of quickly eliminate all
it's
that stuff.
Also like so much like light and so much life and magic and all that was just so present that other stuff didn't matter.
Right, right.
It didn't at all matter. And we were doing what we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know?
It hits me in the heart because I feel the same way. And I not to cut you off, but I do want to know, what was it, like, what was the moment you realized, like, what Brooklyn is, like, where I should go? Like, because you guys are both from different parts of the world. And, I mean, back when you decided to make this move, what was your thoughts of Brooklyn then? I know you kind of mentioned that it was like this punk, right? Like you wanted to see punk shows and like, but what was the moment you were like, I have to get out of where I'm going and Brooklyn is the place that I need to go, or, you know, downtown, wherever, you know, you decided.
Me personally, I actually didn't even have an idea that Brooklyn was all that thing.
Really?
To me, it was like New York, punk rock. That was what was in my head, with all honesty. And I got to Brooklyn because it was the cheapest rent I could possibly find, you know.
That had that aesthetic that you were searching for,
I just looked for a cheap rent. That was it. Like, I didn't really have much of an option. I didn't want to live at Queens. It just felt too contrived and family oriented for me. I wanted to see some movement, but I didn't really. I looked for so many places, and I just ended up at one. When I went to McKibben, I just knew it. You know, actually met Junior. Junior was showing me
right,
my room.
Right, you told me. Yeah.
And he told me, "Oh, this is not about the room you're gonna live in, but the people you're gonna meet."
Wow.
Yeah, but I knew it, and it was cheap enough that I could move to. And I was lucky, like I fell in the right place in the right time without really knowing about it.
Yeah, so much of life is like that, right? You know?
Totally.
But yeah, how about you, Bill? What was your moment of clarity that you had?
Yeah,
you know,
I was in a band that was based out of Providence, Rhode Island. We were called Commas, and it was a really fun band. It was like a really transformative time in my life. You know, I just turned 21 and started to kind of, you know, not really like my surroundings growing up in sort of rural Rhode Island and sort of the provincial ideas that were going on there. And just slowly but surely, I kind of joined this band up in Providence. Those guys became my best friends. And we knew that if we were going to succeed based on what we were doing, it wasn't going to happen in Rhode Island. People, at least at that point, it was very divided between very art-oriented bands like Lightning Bolt, which I love, no question about it.
Yeah.
And then also just kind of like your Dave Matthews, Jack Johnson kind of characters. You know?
Right.
And we weren't either of those. You know, we were sort of, but the thing that we were, I felt, was we were similar, not in sound, but in aesthetic, to Animal Collective and to White Rabbits.
Wow,
and
really?
And to TV on the Radio, and maybe what the National had started to do on Alligator, and things like that. And it was sort of apparent that, or the Hold Steady, all of a sudden you hear that. And it was kind of like, wow, there's all these bands that are just sort of taking American roots music, of just basic songwriting, putting sounds to it, and they're all from Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Okay, we better go there. Yeah. Then. And so we were definitely following in that first wave, sort of the post Yeah Yeah Yeahs wave. We were definitely followers. I was inspired by that movement. But when we got here, it was kind of obvious to us. All right, well, that's not really how it is. You know, you're not going to walk down the street. You may see TV on the Radio, which we did plenty of times.
Yeah, I've seen them.
But it's not. Yeah, they're not. Nobody's coming up and saying, "Hey, man, you guys want to open up for us at next week
at the Spaghetti Factory?"
You know, yeah,
that's what? Not Where's happening. That? Okay, some basement.
So it kind of quickly became apparent that, like, we got to start the next thing. That was maybe 2002 through 6, and now it's time to start the next like wave of. Brooklyn, and that's what we had just touched on for 10 minutes or whatever. That's basically what that came out of, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I just have such great memories of that time being very transformative for myself, because like me being from Brooklyn, even in my, you know, I was from basically like even today, like it was a 35 minute cab ride to get from where I live to here. So it's almost like a different world. Like I lived in like by Coney Island, like Marine Park, you know, like places people are. And I say, oh, I lived in, I lived in Garrison Beach. Like, they're like, what? Where's that? You know what I mean? No one even knows where that is.
Right.
So like, I just feel like it was interesting for me when I first joined my band with my cousin Ev. And I think people who are listening, by this point, my band is Cinema. It was like an awakening for me. I was 18, 19 when I first started playing shows in that area. And then meeting guys like you, like to me, when I first met you, you were like this like Lionheart, just like boom. I would never have guessed that, like, you know, whether you are from here or not from here, like you were of that scene. You know what I mean? So that was who you were to me. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, so when you say like, oh, like you were a follower or whatever, like, I know you didn't mean it in that specific way, but like, you know. That's BS. Like you were to me like a leader. Like I thought, like, damn, like we're hooked up with Bill. Like this is awesome. Like now we're doing something. And because like you had all these ideas, you were making shit happen. And to me, I had no idea what was really going on in the scene. I didn't even know there was a scene. You know. So even from someone like me, like if I was to go from Bay Ridge and say I'm gonna go live in Williamsburg, it would be just as different as you saying, oh, I live in Rhode Island, I want to go to be where this scene is in Williamsburg or whatever, you know, like, so.
Yes, yep, I see exactly what you're saying, and I appreciate that, so what you're saying so much.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, I think that it was magic, that was a magical time.
It totally
time.
Was, yeah.
You look through history, and there's all these moments where the caravan of, like, the gypsy caravan goes through places, you know, all the way back to through recorded history, the Phoenicians, you know, whatever, right. You know, that's move. It went back before that, whatever we didn't record, whenever it happened or whenever it will happen, the caravan's moving along, and we all just got so fortunate to be a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, now it's pulled out, you know, long
Absolutely.
Gone, and all that remains are, you know, sometimes you walk down some of those streets, you can hear, if you listen closely, you'll hear Ev's guitar still resonating there, man. You'll still hear some of those shows. They're not over.
Right.
You know,
right.
They're still going somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's all that's left. And that's what I think we all still walk down that street looking for, just to get that back to that height.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt the same way when you guys showed up. It was like, this is why I came here. I didn't come here for three, now $4.50 cold brew iced coffee, or have better access to Ray-Bans or whatever. Like, I came here because I wanted to see someone who could challenge me. Right. I wanted someone who played a Stratocaster twice as well as me, twice as innovative, twice as much research, like a band that was moving five times as hard. You know what I mean? That's what I was looking for. And that's what you guys and the bands that we were a part of, I think that made it happen as well, because it wasn't just a bunch of people hanging out, right, posting Instagram pictures. You guys are driving around the country while we're driving around the country, while other members of that crew are driving around the country. And then we come back and put on these shows in Brooklyn. It was a real deal.
Yeah, it was a real scene.
Congregation. Yeah, exactly. Boom, for sure. Scene. That's a scene. Yeah.
Like, I felt like, yeah, we definitely did create a scene. And I don't know what, I don't really know if I like that word, but it's the only word that I know to describe what that would be. And I don't know if there is a scene currently, or what even, if people even care to make one. I feel like, you know, specifically today, like back then there was a sense of community. It was a congregation. That's a $3 word. I won't say it's a $5 word.
Right.
It's not the Phoenicians. That was a $5 word, my man. Dropping Phoenicians on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thank you for that. But yeah, I think that today it's kind of this, all, you know, not all for one, it's, or whatever it is, it's the opposite of that. It's everyone for themselves, right? Like, people have their own idea and they want to just do their own thing and make their own success, and just whoever gets left behind, and that's fine, you know? Like, I mean, I could have been in countless bands. I could have just said, hey, my cousin Ev, my man, my family, I just gotta go in another direction, man. Sorry. Like, yeah. You know, like, I could have done that if I wanted to. Or Ev could have done the same thing to me. And I mean, he's an amazing guitarist. He could have decided, I want to be the awesome guy in a band, you know? Like, but making that decision to stick it out and keep doing it. That's not easy to do, and I feel like that's not really what's going on right now. People are kind of just, like, dropping in and out of things, and, like, I met a drummer the other day who was in, like, 45 bands.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, like, literally, like, I look on his Facebook, like, 40 bands, like, and they're all bands that I've known, like, man, he was in that band, like, you know, like, scene bands, you know what I mean? Like, but I don't feel like that's not a recipe for whatever success would be. I feel like that's a little bit more of a, you know, no disrespect to him, but a little bit more of like a cop-out, just saying like, maybe one of these will go, and then I'm in that band. You know what I mean?
Spaghetti, like, at the wall.
Right, exactly, sure. Yeah. But just to kind of like dovetail off of that, what do you think? This is kind of an existential deep question. Maybe it's a little too deep for, you know, noon on a Sunday. But what is it for you guys that keeps you coming back and keeps you trying to make this art? You know, I don't want to like put any words in your mouth, just so I have a tendency to, like, when I ask a question, I start answering it for you. So I'm not going to do that.
I'm guilty of that as well, believe me.
But yeah, but seriously, like, what is it? What do you think? Where does that drive come from? What is the spark that is inside you that keeps it from stopping, you know?
I think that you can even put like a little corny song in the background, but I'm going to mention what I'm going to mention.
Okay, do you have like maybe like some Green Day or something? Like, yeah, like Time of Our Lives or something?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, something like that. But I would say that wanting to make music saved my life. And
really?
I really had to do it, because, and that's how I got out of one of the biggest holes I've ever been. And it's very hard. It's very hard without a community. It's very hard, as you say, without people recognizing that. It's just so stupid, actually. It's just, like, dumb, you know? Like, things change, and we've seen them change so much. And this band be here and then be there, and up and ups and downs for everybody. And it's just so important to have the healthy competition and the support. But it's just, I don't know, it's just something that I have to do. I don't have another explanation for it.
Right. That's...
It sucks sometimes.
Yeah, because you want to be able to explain what's inside a little better, but, you know, that's kind of a perfect way to describe it. Like, you just have to do it.
Or have to even want some sort of actual, like, comfort in a way. Like, oh, I want to have, you know, not worry. I want to see my family more often. It's been almost 2 years that I don't see my family.
Wow.
And that is very tough for me.
I can imagine. That's, oh God.
You know, like, it's my culture and it's everything, but at the same time, it's just like, well, you know, I have to do it, you know.
Yeah. Bill,
Yeah, I just kind of don't see an alternative. And I've even, you know, pondered, like, even before Silver Teeth started, this band kind of in between the Governors slash my quote-unquote solo phase and this band, I've even thought, like, how else can I achieve what I'm trying to achieve here, whatever it is? And it doesn't, I just don't think that there's anything that would make me feel like I was doing the right thing at this point, you know, besides being in a band and trying to make this happen. And this happened, by the way, is making the best music. You know what I mean? That's really what the ultimate goal is,
right.
is like, you know, making songs and sharing them with people. And to an extent, you know, I love all of the nuances of the show and, you know, all of the things that go into that and everything. Of course, I love performing. But at the end of the day, what keeps me going is just like, I feel like a writer. I feel like I'm trying to write that ultimate song.
Yeah.
Just chipping away at it.
Yeah.
And
you never know when it's going to pop out of you, too.
You never know. It's very strange. Yeah. It's very strange.
Yeah. Obviously I can speak on this as well. You know, I feel like I work a day job, right? And I work at a Japanese bank, right? At a bank. Me. I work at a bank. Okay. So, when I go in there every day, I don't feel comfortable there. I don't feel like I'm where I should be, right? I do it because I have to. I need to make money, and it pays me well enough that I can also do my band on the side. But I know, comparatively, like when I'm on stage, and I mean, you guys have seen me play, it's like a different person is on stage. And I love that Jekyll and Hyde kind of thing about me, where like when I'm off stage, it's just like, oh, hey, yeah, what's up? You know, like, but then when I'm on stage, I'm like, like that. And that comes from being in a band with the right person, too. Like, I'm in a band with my cousin who helps bring that out of me, which I'm very thankful for. But I just know when I'm on stage that I'm doing the right thing, right? And I know, like, that's an important part of the process is the actual performance, right? And getting that down, you know, it's not as easy as just get on stage and start fucking around, you know, like... It's a process. It takes practice to be that comfortable on stage, like you guys are, and you've been playing for many years. And what's your favorite part about playing live? Like, because like you were talking about the writing process, right? But that's a different thing than the actual performing process. So, what's your favorite part about that?
You create so much energy.
Yeah,
it's like the creation of that energy, and you don't know where it's gonna go. And I at least go for that, and then. Trying to sustain that, even like afterwards, I don't know. It just creates so much energy, and then I don't want to get out of it.
Right, right.
You know, but then you have to interact with people afterwards, and you have to. I try to just like, let me sustain this for longer this time. You know, like,
yeah.
How
am
I gonna do this?
Like, stay in the moment a little longer. Yeah.
And just to make a little weird parenthesis here. The whole, you're talking about the bank and everything, the more you do this, it's like the harder, at least for me, feels to just be adaptable to the system of things.
you know,
it's like the more you do it, the better you get it at it too, and the closer you are to it, the harder it is to adapt to. And I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Yeah, you got a lot of thought out. I thought most of it. Bill. I mean, I know when you're the same way. When I saw you on stage, you know, you're just like this presence. Like you're a big presence on stage. You know what I mean? Not that you're not a presence in real life all the time. You're not on stage specifically. You know, like you let the hair down, and it's just this being is there. And to me, it always looked like you were meant to be on a stage. I'm sure you. Obviously feel the same way, but like, what's your favorite part about being on that stage, and what do you soak up the most from it?
I like how, like, each, you know, like, if you're a baseball player, each at-bat is a unique at-bat, you know what I mean? And you never know what's going to happen, you know what I mean? And, like, you never know what's going to happen when you take the stage, when you start a song, you know, there's a point in some songs where I go into a guitar solo, and I just can't wait. For if you probably had a way to measure like my heart rate throughout the day, moments before this particular guitar solo and this particular song we've been playing for the last month or two, you know, regularly,
yeah,
I just can't wait to see what happens,
right?
And chip away and try to remember the the notes or however the little lines and stuff, you know, I put
just
in there.
See how your body's going to react to that situation.
See how it's going to go.
Because you have that muscle memory. It's like you know that song, you know that solo, but you don't know what's going to happen when you put the guitar in your hands and put your fingers on the frets and whatever. You know, like, I feel the same way, but yeah.
That to me is the most exciting part, but I just love being on stage. I really have always found that to be where I feel the most comfortable in a sense. You know, I'm still, you'll still see that I have my eyes closed a lot of times when I play, and I'm still I'm still not, you know, all the way there. 20 years of, you know, doing talent shows in middle school and now whatever it is, you know, I'm still susceptible to nerves for sure.
Yeah,
every single day, but up there.
But if you weren't, then you would be like complacent. You know what I mean? Like, I think, and that's another, to go back to the whole people being comfortable to, you know, not experience like that nervousness is like that sense of danger, because you don't like it. It's a very vulnerable and can be a dangerous thing playing on stage, right? Not dangerous in like you're gonna get shot or something, but like dangerous like. You're putting yourself out there and you don't know what people are going to do or how they're going to respond. And that's a scary thing. And I think that's something too, that's also kind of, we're losing a little bit in music today. Like even look at like some of the biggest performances, like the Super Bowl, for example, right? Ugh. That whole thing with like the Red Hot Chili Peppers were unplugged when they play,
right.
You know, like, so like, something as big as that, they eliminate the possibility for any human error, right? They take away the danger, right? And what is left? This schlock, just stock, shitty performance that no one is going to remember. No one is going to speak about. No one is going to say, remember when the Peppers played? They're going to remember it for the fact that it was faked, that it was rigged, you know?
So, right. And they do that for the national anthem, too. And it's just interesting that a lot of people who complain about what's going on with the whole Colin Kaepernick deal and all that business, that they're okay with a pre-recorded, you know, unemotional version they're okay with faking the national anthem. They're totally fine with the artificial presentation of this supposedly, you know, quintessential American moment.
Right.
They don't even have the guts to hand a mic to somebody and let them sing it. You know, they want to control it that much. They want to create, you know, the illusion that that it's real. And that's not just in that arena. I mean, that's everywhere now. I mean, that's, you got brands on Snapchat. You've got grown men whose job is to go on Snapchat and market things to kids.
Yeah.
I mean, this is unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, even not even like, you know, 10 years ago, you couldn't even get half the degrees that some of my sister's friends who are younger than me, they have like a social media marketing management junior degree. Like,
that's
just like
Ev Gold is a PhD in that right there. You know, I mean, watch MySpace first of all, and watch the Facebook presentation of that and the authenticity of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you back it up when you do it. Hey, we're playing this show. Here's the show. Now we're at the show. We're done with the show. That's the story. Instead of creating these people, they create stories. They don't document. They create.
Right. It's fabricated.
Garbage.
Yeah. Totally.
You know? There's also the aspect of just there's a bunch of people holding stones from their couches at home, you know, waiting for who's going to be the first one to slip on a national anthem.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's happened. Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yes,
a very hard
true.
Situation to, I think, sing too, as far as like the way you hear yourself in a stadium.
I can imagine, totally. Yeah. Not easy.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, so there's reasons behind why they do certain things like that. And, you know, whatever, that's fine. I mean, I think I'm talking about too, like the fact that in general it doesn't seem like I lost my train of thought too. it doesn't seem like music industry, you know. And I hate that term too. It's like it is an industry. It's just people just pumping out these
distractions.
Distractions, and these pop stars they're more worried about their outfit and like, oh, look over here. It's like a distraction. It's like a magic trick. It's like, oh, don't pay attention to the fact that I have no talent.
Right.
You know, like, look over here at my ass is almost out, guys. Check that out. That's nice, right? Oh, you won't really be realizing that I'm not singing, or like, oh, look at me. What's his name? Adam Levine and all my tattoos. Right. Look at me. Oh, you're not gonna pay attention to the fact that I'm not actually singing this part right now. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, In general, it pisses me off, and I don't know why. Like, you still look back and remember these great performances of, like, these artists from, like, the 70s and even the 80s, and, like, you know, this is a more recent trend. Like, this didn't always exist before, right? People at one point had no choice but to make it happen by themselves, you know? Like, they had no choice but to, like, actually sing the damn song, you know, right, or play it live, you know? It doesn't matter how many people were watching or how big the moment was. They had no choice. They, like, Ray Charles had to get it right the first time when he was recording on that wax back in the day when, like,
absolutely,
you know what I mean? Like, they had no choice, and that's why you looked back then. That shit's raw and real.
Totally.
Because they had no choice. It wasn't this, you weren't looking at a computer screen like, okay, I'm gonna take this vocal line and put it over here because that matched better with this thing, you know? Like,
right.
I don't know. Sorry, I'm getting worked up. I gotta relax.
And too. It hurts to think about what you're doing with your life. That is the problem, you know? And then they just serve us and everyone else with just, like, distraction.
Right.
You know? And the whole idea of talent is completely messed up. People don't really know what talent is. They talk about this other thing that they say is talent.
Interesting.
God.
And you mentioned Ray Charles. There's an anecdote that's amazing that comes from David Briggs, who produced basically Neil Young's, one of his right hand men.
Oh, okay.
Producer of most of the most dark and substantial records for sure. And Briggs noted that the epiphanal moment in his life was one time he walked into a studio and he was young, like 17-year-old intern in Los Angeles, and witnessed recording to wax, one take, Ray Charles playing piano with one hand, reading Braille with the other,
holy shit,
singing and having an orchestra play live behind him.
Right.
Take one to tape. You know what I mean? Where's that? You know what I mean? Where is that guy now? You know?
That kind of stuff doesn't even have the opportunity to exist anymore. That's the problem, because it's like you were saying about talent. Like, what is talent? That's another. We're getting really deep on this show today.
Yeah.
What is talent? Yeah. It kind of is an interesting question. Like, what the fuck is talent? Because they're telling us what it is. Because Miley Cyrus or Kanye West, like, they sell millions of records. They must be talented.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, Taylor Swift. I could go on a whole thing about her. She is. She is a strategy, in my opinion. Like, she's a strategy from the industry. She starts off as, like, a teeny bopper country singer, which that in and of itself is a strategy, because there's bands that, like, turn to country when their careers are, like, kind of on the downturn, because country music is the most profitable music in the world. It's country. It's the music of our country, right? I mean, it's like, so, like, and people still buy records of country people, right? I mean, like Kenny Chesney and Garth Brooks and Shelton, whatever his name is.
And the real, the assassins of integrity are really these Jason Aldeans, Florida Georgia Line. I mean, that's really where today's pop country is just, it's actually offensive and in the sense that
pop
insults
country,
your intelligence.
Yeah, that's
a
different, like, it's clearly like everything is like a Budweiser commercial or something. Yeah. It's like, or a car commercial. It's like, buy this Chevy, you know, or something like that. You know, it's not authentic. And I mean, like, you know, I misspoke. I say, like, it's pop country. It's not like the real country, because there's still some great real country artists that are, I can't, some don't come to mind right now. But anyway, I want to try to, like, reel us in a little bit and get to more talking about you guys, because you put out an EP recently, right?
Yes.
And I really love it. I wish it was longer. It's only three songs, you bastards. But I would like to play a song from that, if that's cool.
That'd be great. Thanks.
I really like the song Burning Planet. And maybe we'll hear it, and then maybe we'll talk about the recording process for you guys, what that was like after that. If that's cool with you.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Okay, so we're with Silver Teeth right now. It's Radio Free Brooklyn. You're listening to The Stroll Show. This song is called Burning Planet. We'll be back with more from the band after this. Right, that was Burning Planet off of Silverteeth's most recent EP. Guys, fucking awesome song. I really enjoyed it. It's perfect for like Sunday afternoon listening. You know, the rain's trickling outside. You're in the bed with your lovely lady. Yeah, hopefully you're not alone in this world. I don't know. what is the recording process like for you guys on something like that? Because like I was saying in the break to you, you know, it's definitely different from previous recordings I've heard from you guys and from you, Bill. Like, talk a little bit about what the songwriting process is for this kind of stuff and the recording process and so on.
Sure. I usually write songs in batches, I find. Like, it just kind of naturally happens that way. And then something will stick out, one or two of them usually kind of make it through that. And such was the case with Burning Planet, like a year or two ago, something like that. And in this instance with this song and with this EP that we just put out, as well as with some other songs that we recorded at the same time, we did the record with Keith Robinson, who's a tremendous drummer, kind of all over a bunch of stuff that's coming out of Brooklyn and also coming out of Texas and Austin, and tremendous drummer and producer, and he has a studio down Park Slope. So we took a lot of time to really work on the arrangements and think about, you know, how do we want to lay this down? What, you know, I've recorded a lot of demos, a lot of different tempos, and yeah, maniacally listened to them and all that business. So,
and you're a studio person in yourself. You've recorded albums for other people. So, like, you have to kind of try to separate yourself from that, like, producer mentality to, like, I am the artist, but you still kind of have it in the back of your mind of, like, kind of doing his job for him.
Yeah,
like,
totally. I wanted to do the Silverteeth stuff when we first started thinking about recording about a year ago. I kind of wanted to do it alone, like just really lock ourselves away and from an artistic perspective, but kind of quickly realized, hey, you know what? I have a great friend and resource we have a great friend and resource that, and having that person's, that next layer of communication and thought into the songs made a huge difference, I think, you know. And that's something different than maybe some of the other music that I was putting out before, where I was, even if there was an engineer or producer, I was still driving the ship and I'm writing the check, so we're putting egg shakers all over this thing, man. I don't care if it doesn't work,
you know? Carabas, you know? Or what are those things, castanetas?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like, I don't care if you don't like that lyric, I like it. Yeah. Well, this time it was much more of a discussion, and we all took ownership of these songs. So songs that I wrote, I didn't write, I feel like it was sort of an equally shared process. And that's how we get the result that we put out in this case.
Yeah, it's a very lush sounding, all the three songs are really, and they're all kind of different too. And it's very spacious, which is definitely different from the previous stuff. And as far as like singing wise, how do you guys decide like if you're going to sing one song, Gabby or Bill, you're going to sing one, or like when do you decide, okay, we're going to do this harmonies? Like, how do you work that together? Like, I mean, it must be nice because you're like together all the time. You live together. You can like get up, have breakfast, work on vocal melodies, but work on harmonies and stuff like that. So is that hard to do live too? Like, is it hard to like do the vocal harmonies together live? Or how does that work for you as a singer?
Well, first, we in general sing the songs that we write. So I'm singing the songs that I wrote. He's singing the songs that he's written.
I gotcha, yeah.
And the harmonies, I think it's just became something very natural and easy because we've played so many cover shows playing like old country songs and practiced so much of that it became second nature.
Right.
In a way, you know, like I mean, Bill was already a great harmony singer when I met him. Mm. I had to just, you know, basically then that was me basically playing those gigs with him. That's me getting that to be second nature for me as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's already always been easy for him since I've known him.
You got that perfect, what do they call that? Perfect pitch or whatever.
Like, is it? I don't know. I just remember when I recorded with my high school band, there was the producer, this guy, Randy Hunicky, he's up in Rhode Island, and he's got a little studio up there, an analog studio, big 2-inch tape. And he said, you know, hey, man, why don't you try singing a harmony on like one of the songs you recorded? And when I heard it back through the headphones, I remember that moment. It was kind of just like when you realize like a secret of the universe, like they're like, yes, it's Adam and Eve, as in an Adam and the Eve is the dawn, or whatever. It figured out some mystery. It kind of just solved the problem in my head. And ever since then, I've just loved harmonies, and also being a big Mike Patton fan
He's a vocal gymnast, that guy. That guy is like crazy, crazy.
Yeah,
he's insane. He's insane.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But we only got maybe like another 10 minutes or so, maybe less, I think. I really did want to ask this question because I remember a couple years ago, I think this might have even been before you guys were Silverteeth, you did shows in Brazil. Right? Back, what was it, like maybe 2 years ago?
It was 2 years ago, about 2 years. It was January of 14, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wow, coming up on almost, wow, it's crazy how time just evaporates. Wow.
It's unreal.
But what is it like over there playing music? Like, what was that experience like? I imagine it must have been, I mean, obviously, Gabby, you're from Brazil, like you grew up there. Maybe you could speak a little bit about the music scene there, I guess, or what. I don't know what it's like. I'm just really curious.
I was really lucky to be born when I was born, and I had an uncle that was a younger uncle that took me to actually watch the beginnings of the scene in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
A huge starting off like as punk and garage music. These guys, I think it's very interesting how like what's the word when something there was like a lot of country music there, a lot of awful, ridiculous, like romantic country music where I come from, and that created a counterculture movement, which is basically the strongest one in the country too, like as far as like an indie movement. So many bands came out of my town, and so many cool bands played in my town, like randomly, like from lots of like just
Dirty Projectors came down.
Melvins Mudhoney and
it's like a big deal when they come, right? It's like do they play big shows?
They play small places.
Really?
Like, yeah,
I would imagine the opposite.
Local bands, like there's just like so much action happening there, and I was lucky to have this uncle that took me out when I was 15, and I was just like mind blown, and that was it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Going back there and playing was very scary for me because I wasn't really seen as I never did music.
Oh, you didn't really play?
I left Brazil to basically be a musician, like the kind of like the girl that was supposed to be a doctor, you know.
Wow.
Broke with all the expectations and I couldn't really just do it there. And going back there was almost like I felt like I was an American Idol, and I was just like performing in front of my whole family and longtime friends and like some of the leaders of the scene were there too to just like check it out.
Check it out. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was very scary and I was very nervous.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a totally different experience than I imagine than you had, Bill, because you're going there and you know you have been a musician this whole time and like that must have been a little bit of a dream come true to like play in a different part of the world, right?
I mean, definitely.
Yeah,
no question about it. It was super. It was a highlight for sure. I mean, I would say that when you're playing to and you know this because of all the European touring you're doing and all that, it's when you're playing to an audience that English is not their primary language and your songs can translate and they contain the universal code or whatever it is, like that is an unbelievable feeling to play a song and we experience it too when we hear like a French or whatever band, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
So that was one thing. But yeah, it was just an amazing experience. And I can't wait to get back there. And international touring is something that, you know, we really just want to get in on. And, you know, and it's for that extra element of surprise, you know.
Right. There's a sense of, you know, that word dangerous keeps coming back to my mind because, you know, I think it's like the word of the day. It's not Phoenicians. I'm sorry, Phoenicians didn't make it. I think danger. When you're out, like for me, and I can imagine, like you know, being in Brazil too. Not that it's a dangerous place, but there is just an element of just like when I find myself like on a street in Berlin, and I'm about to play a show like 2 hours later, and I'm just like looking around, like where the fuck am I? Like why am I on this corner? Am I crazy? Should I be home, like studying for like the LSAT or something? I don't know what I should be doing. Like, but I'm here and I'm gonna kill it best I can. But I find myself like, and what you're? That's when you're really alive, right? Because like feel like you start thinking about these things. Like, why am I here? What am I doing? Is this the right place to be? You know, like I can just imagine. Then like you know, I mean, you wake up in Brazil one day and you're like, I'm in Brazil to play music. That's insane, you know, like it's just it's kind of mind blowing to think that music can take you to these places, you know, like that you would not maybe normally go.
It really is. It's incredible.
You know, I just, you know, not to talk all about me, but you know, just I've been very fortunate that I've been able to go to the places that I've been, and you know, people look at me and like, oh yeah, you're going like on a vacation, like oh you're going on vacation, oh
yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like yeah, like I slept in a barn in northern Italy, my man, like legitimately with cows, like woke me up with cowbells, like not like, you know, the SNL cowbell skit, like actual bells around the neck of cows,
right.
Like woke me up from my sleep. So that's what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, you know, it's not a vacation. Like when you go on like a weekend thing to, a run,
it's tiring.
Yeah, it's tiring.
Oh,
you're
God,
not,
yeah.
You're not doing it, you know, for leisure. You're not sipping Mai Tais on the Riviera or something, you know.
No.
Like you're working and you know people who don't understand that can kiss my ass. No, I'm kidding.
I think a lot of people think that we live in vacation,
right? Yeah. It's eternal vacation. Yeah.
Right, they see it on there, like oh man, that's
you gotta
that's
get a job
great.
So but you gotta get a job. But you gotta get a job.
Yeah, yeah. What are you really doing?
Well, but what are you gonna do? Are you gonna get a job?
Like why? Right. And so we're kind of winding down. So what's your next? What's next for you guys? Where's your next vacation taking you?
Yeah.
You know, right?
We're going to the moon, straight up. SpaceX. I'll be the guinea pig. The next one. Send me up there. Leave
all
me.
Right, just come back in one piece, please.
Yeah. No, we're definitely we're actively. We got a lot of new songs we're writing. We've been. Gabby and I each, we are doing a lot of shows in the next month or so, everywhere from Burlington through Brooklyn. We're playing in New York City, in Brooklyn, on 11-9, 11 as in November 9th, at Chase Stadium.
Oh, cool, yeah.
We love Chase Stadium. Cool.
That's an
amazing
great place.
Oh, God, amazing
Glad
place.
It's still standing, right?
Absolutely. And just generally speaking, at this point, we're really looking forward. We're up in Newport, Rhode Island. We moved up there from after being here in Brooklyn. We have a great artist community up there, great musician community, and we're kind of looking forward to the winter to sort of be parked, develop songs. Work. Mm-hmm. Tom Berglund is our drummer. He's up there in Newport. He's a great musician. And so we're looking forward to getting down to business and really just writing the next record. We're not the next, the record.
Right, right.
In the interim, we have some things that we're going to be putting out, some singles that we've recorded or some stuff we might record. We're going to be doing a video shoot, a live video shoot tomorrow, like a 3 or 4 song type of thing. So we got a lot of smaller stuff in the works and hopefully more as we kind of work towards getting to make the record, you know.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to release also a video of a local artist from Newport, a horror movie that he did, and he adapted it to one of our songs.
Romeo Elorin is his name.
Total DIY
great director.
Video.
Cool.
Creepy.
Wow. Yeah. Keep me in the loop when that comes out.
And no
we'll
doubt.
Definitely, we'll premiere it on our Radio Free Brooklyn social media story, whatever the hell it is.
Awesome.
Cool. Thank you guys for coming. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Paul. And again, you guys are one of my favorite bands. And
oh, stop it. Stop. Go on.
Amazing
go
times
on.
Together. But but in reality, it's great to see a band like Cinema or even other bands from around here that are just pushing on, you know.
So much and respect for you guys.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
We mean it.
I respect you
it's
guys
very
as well.
Inspiring.
Awesome. You guys inspire us too, and I'm glad that we're all continuing down this crazy path to nowhere. I don't know where we're going.
Yeah, totally.
But it's been a pleasure. And quickly a little housekeeping. If anybody wants to donate to Radio Free Brooklyn to our cause, you can go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. You could donate to our Patreon page. We really appreciate a dollar a month. You know, it adds up. Believe me, we're doing some things here. We're opening up a record store upstairs soon, so we got a lot of things coming on. And again, thanks to you guys, thanks to Silver Teeth, and thanks to the listeners. And Steve, wherever you are, hopefully you're floating and you're sinking, whatever you do as a scuba man. But be well, my friend, and we'll be back next week. So till then, take care.
Yeah.